Sunday afternoon and time once again for Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Joining me in the studio today, North Carolina Poet Laureate Kathy Smith Bowers. Hello, Kathy. How are you doing today?
Hello, Jeff Davis. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks so much. And thanks so much for being here today.
I'm happy to be here.
And joining us also is Stephanie Bozuski, who's a student of poetry, I guess we should say,
absolutely,
among other things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Stephanie actually has interesting history with Wordplay because Stephanie was a member of the original Colossal Committee.
Yes.
That produced this program in its first year.
Absolutely, yes.
And as I recall, your first show actually featured Kathy Smith Bowers.
Thankfully, it was Kathy Smith Bowers because Kathy carried the show for me. I don't think I could have done that show nearly as well without someone who was a pro like Kathy.
It was
sure.
a fine show.
Thank
yes,
you.
Yeah,
thank Kathy, too.
Right. And that show was my introduction, actually, to the work of Kathy Smith Bowers. I might, who knows?
You never know.
It's a mystery. It's a mystery.
Enough about me. Let's talk about some of my points.
That works for me, Kathy.
I am delighted to be here. Jeff, thank you for giving us this opportunity.
My pleasure.
We'll be doing this. Our plan is to, for every third Sunday night of the month.
From now until the end of the millennium.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Or at least longevity. For the next 2 years.
We're calling this the Wordplay Laureates Hour, an hour of talking the poetry and literature of North Carolina, during which I hope to shine a light on the amazing literary voices throughout the state. And tonight, as Jeff has already told you, we are delighted to have with us Stephanie Bazuski, otherwise known as Ms. Biz.
Ms. Biz, that's right.
Stephanie, welcome, welcome. And Jeff told us a little bit about your history with wordplay and radio and interviewing. But you've got such an interesting history, so would you tell us some more about that?
Well, I started with wordplay. I was asked to read some poems for a fund drive at WPVM ever knowing
that's
anybody
right.
there and without ever
the
having...
The other station, as we
refer to it.
The other station,
the other station. And there I met Edwin Shealy,
right.
who is one of the greatest guys... in terms of helping people find their voices and creating new shows and stuff. Anyway, a group of us, as Jeff said earlier, got together and we became learners of how to produce and host radio programs. And as part of that process for me getting comfortable with the board and with speaking into a microphone and all of the components that go into sitting at the chair and doing a radio show, I... volunteered and did some back announcing of some music. Eventually, that time slot when I did that volunteering turned into a music show called Collaboriform. And I continued with Collaboriform from that autumn until a little less than a year ago. So for quite a number of years, probably 4 years or something like that. And in the meantime, I did a show called What Nourishes. And it was... a 13-week run of a series on the working artist, and in fact, one of the poems that I'm going to read today is about a couple of the people that I met during that series.
Right.
And so, let's see. Did I do something? I can't remember. I think there's another show thrown in there somewhere. Oh, the Dr. Awesome
the
show.
Dr. Awesome
oh,
show.
And yes, Paris yes. from the South.
And
actually,
Paris
I did.
From the, that's right.
Yes,
Paris
yes,
of the South.
Yes,
that's right.
I've
right.
been of the South. Right.
Yes,
I was
yes.
a co-host with one of our French hosts, French speakers.
Yes.
For about a year, and then Jason Holland, the station manager at the other station, who now does the Dr. Awesome show here, invited me to be his co-host on that show. So yeah, I've got like what 4 or 5 of them that I've done.
Yeah.
I love radio.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Been good
fun.
To me.
Right.
Well, you
right.
do a wonderful job. I remember how comfortable you made me the night that we did the interview. So. Even though you say that I carried it, it was because you made me so comfortable. So thank you for that.
Thank
you.
I
hope you're comfortable tonight, too.
I am excited and thrilled and comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, we are thrilled, too. Well, Stephanie, one of the things that you've done for us tonight is to kind of bring our attention back to form. I know for myself, my long history of writing, I have... written very happily in free verse and never really thought that I would want to write in a form. As a matter of fact, I always thought that people who wrote in form were control freaks. And a very interesting thing happened to me after my brother died in 1997, and I was so emotionally devastated that I didn't write for a while, and then I found myself... needing to get back to writing and feeling that free verse would give me more freedom than I really wanted because of the emotional subject matter. And so I discovered a little form called the Minute, that really provided me with a kind of scaffolding for that powerfully emotional subject matter. And so I wrote in that form for 4 years. And the reason that I'm, you know, sort of thinking about this form now is that you're going to read us some things this evening that are also in a form that reminds me a little bit of this form, even though it's a form of your own making, which makes me a little bit jealous.
Well, maybe you'll be inspired and create one of your own.
I'm already inspired.
Good.
So explain the minute to us.
Okay. Yeah. This little form is called a minute, and it was invented by the poet laureate of the state of Arkansas, Verna Lee Hinegardner. And it's called a minute because it's written in, the whole poem has 60 syllables.
60 syllables.
60 syllables. It has three stanzas, 20 syllables per stanza. And there are eight syllables in the first line, and then 4-4-4, 8-4-4-4, 8-4-4-4.
Wow.
That's not anal enough.
We're talking form here.
It has rhyme. It rhymes A A B B C C D D E E F F. And then, if that's not enough punishment, you go out and self-flagellate. But I'll share one of these. The poems that I started writing were all about my brother's illness and death from AIDS, and those poems became actually the next to the last section in the book. It's that section's called Vespers.
Right.
I decided that since this was going to be called a book of minutes, I would
have liturgical.
Fashion it after the medieval Book of Hours.
Yeah.
And so these poems became the section called Vespers. So I'm going to read one of these poems because it's one of the few poems in the book that I actually managed to adhere to the form.
And strictly, you mean?
Strictly to the form. So hopefully the rhyme won't beat you over the head, but it does have that rhyme scheme of A, B, B, C, C, and so on. So, and this poem is one of those last... in the last month or so of my brother's life, when I was really aware that I wasn't going to have him much longer. And this little form just really allowed me to shine a light on those moments of intensity that I wanted to hold on to. And he and his partner Bill lived out in San Anselmo, California. And this is one of those moments of intensity. It's called Labor Day. Morning's IV done, all his pills. He turns to Bill's gift of melon, icy sweet chunks of honeydew brought home from the local deli. I watch each bite he takes, then wipe his chin. Unbelievable, he says, and lifts a bite to me. Says, here, just taste this. So, did you hear that rhyme?
I did. Didn't meet me over the head there.
Pills, bills, melon, chunks, the deli, bite, wipe, he, a. This is the point at which my undergraduates used to tell me that I needed to get a new rhyming dictionary. But I was kind of happy with that little poem because I was able to adhere to the form. And otherwise, I just did what I call kind of dancing with the form, you know, and I'd say, okay, I'll do this. I won't be able to do that, but I'll do this if you'll let me do that. So that was kind of a schizophrenic, you know, way of writing poems.
You were bargaining with the form.
I was bargaining with the form, yeah, and it worked. But Stephanie, I'm thrilled that you're going to share some poems with us tonight. And should we move on to that now, or should we take a music break, or...
Let's hear the poem through first,
okay,
and then we'll do a music break. Yeah.
Okay.
Tell us, you were You wrote these poems that we're going to hear tonight actually in a class in the Great Smokies program, was that?
The first one. Yes, I was a student of Kathy's in the Great Smokies writing program.
Yeah.
And there were a number of poems that I wrote in that class, but one of them was of this particular form, and it just sort of happened. And, you know, I can only imagine that it really didn't just sort of happen. It had to have been inspired by A Book of Minutes and Kathy's guidance in, you know, the abiding image and concrete, sensual, real things to pull together, and also the use of a form to give that kind of structure to things that are particularly that you're particularly sensitive, that you're emotionally tender about. And so I can only know that that it was perfect, that you were my teacher and that you had that same experience that you were actually offering as a way for me to use for my own emotional things.
Yes.
And so I can't really remember how the form itself came about, other than I was probably playing with sound, which was always my way in, an image and sound and the music that happens around that for me and in me. And what emerged in that very first poem in that writing program was a form that I call 7-in-4-3-7 time, and I would love a better name for that, but it reflects exactly the form, the structure of the poem itself. It is 7 stanzas long.
Uh-huh.
There are 3 lines in each stanza, and the first line is 4 syllables, the second is 3, and the third is 7.
Uh-huh.
So it's fewer than 100 syllables of of words for a poem, so they're very short, and so you have, and like the poem that you read of a minute, you've got a lot that gets captured in a very few amount of words, and so it's very lean and long.
Yeah.
And the first one I called Virgin Dance in 4-3-7 time, and because it was my first one, I didn't really know what I was doing. And I used a technique that I probably also learned from Kathy. I can't remember specifically where it was. But to use longer titles to kind of also give me a structure and a direction for where the poem was going. So the poem itself is each stanza of the poem of this first one, and it's the only one that I did that way, is labeled with its own little title. And also, another thing that I was noticing, because of course I was rehearsing some of these to be able to say them on the air here, I noticed that the music of this kind of poem, because 7 is an odd number, a prime number and an odd number, the music of something that you use 7 with is unusual, and it doesn't really speak the way lots of other poems are written. So
it has that little built-in tension because it's an odd number.
Is that what it is?
Well, it seems to me that that would be part of the interesting, you know, aspect of using that number.
Okay. Whatever it is, it just, you know, it doesn't go da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, it doesn't sort of fall on the beat. The one other thing that I was going to say, now I have forgotten. I'll just read the poem.
Let's hear the poem.
Time to read the poem. Virgin Dance in 4-3-7 time. Dawn. Curtains parted, light falls in. Naked stretch lifts from the bed. Speaking for myself. I call his cell on a whim. What weight I make from whimsy. Picnic lunch on Michelle's lawn under the arching maple. Placemats? Why not? A fool would choose to be uncomfortable. Surprise encounter with Abby. Our friend's sick from chemo. We argue to cure our sorrow. Afternoon radio meeting with Jason and Jillian. We say we'll do one show, but each wants something different. At dusk, I wash dishes. Contemplate the sounds that moved me today. Into the night. Light hides. I rest in the breath of my belly, my bared bones.
We'll be right back. The breath of the belly. Stephanie, very interesting music you brought in today. What was that?
That was that's okay. That was Meredith Monk doing a piece called Little Breath from her CD Impermanence. And I chose it because I actually like female particularly. I seem to be attracted to female experimental vocalists mm-hmm. and sound makers. Mm-hmm. This one I chose because it is about the breath and experimenting with what happens and being free to just sort of let the sound influence you. Mm-hmm. I actually do have a quote that I brought in mm-hmm. Of Meredith Monk's. She is a composer, a performer, a director, a vocalist, a filmmaker, and a choreographer, and mm-hmm. all of those things are arts that yeah. I love yeah. in for myself. Yeah. Anyway, she has said, I work in between the cracks where the voice starts dancing, where the body starts singing. So... nice. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, that is. That's very nice. Mm. Yeah.
That's lovely. That's lovely.
She's cool. Mm.
Cool. We have to hear more from her.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Stephanie, I was so delighted to see these poems again because I remember when you started working in this form, the good thing was that I did not recognize that you were working in any form. And, you know, I think that's good. That's good. And it was also a delight. A surprising delight to realize that you were working within such a tight little form that gave that the images such a powerful energy, I think. But I just am very impressed with this little sequence because what you do is you take us through a day. You move us from dawn up until lunchtime and then at dusk and then at night, the speaker of the poem is going to bed.
Mm-hmm.
So it has that lovely arc of the movement through the day. And another thing that I think is very powerful about this little sequence is that juxtaposition of moments in the quotidian world, such as afternoon radio meeting with Jason and Gillian,
uh-huh.
Gillian,
uh-huh.
and just, you know, this little moment of the workaday world. And that comes right after that very poignant little poem, Surprise Encounter with Abby, Our Friends Sick from Chemo, we argue to cure our sorrow. So there's a powerful tension with the way that you juxtapose these little moments. And some of the things that I really find interesting in this poem, and your other ones too, is what you do with sound. For instance, this little form doesn't, I mean, it relies solely on the syllable count, right?
Right, right. There's no rhyme.
There's no rhyme. Right. And yet you do such wonderful things with sound. And the second one, speaking for myself, you've got that, I call his cell, call and sell. I mean, that's almost a rhyme. At least it is in my rhyming dictionary. My rhyming dictionary says it is.
In South Carolina, that's considered a rhyme.
I like it. I like it. Yeah. When in the Carolinas.
Right. On a whim, what weight I make. You hear that wonderful assonance, that weight and make.
Yeah.
And then the use of the word whim and then whimsy. So you pack a lot in that little teeny poem. It's powerful stuff. And then in the next one, you've got fool and choose. And the most poignant one is right in the middle. Our friend sick from chemo. We argue to cure our sorrow. I noticed that in this little teeny poem, there are seven O's.
Oh, how interesting.
There are seven O's.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
As few syllables as you're allowed to have in this poem, there are seven O's. And that is the lowest free. I'm kind of obsessed with sound and, you know, the frequencies of vowels. That the O is the lowest frequency vowel sound that can be used to create a feeling of sadness, of gloom. And that's certainly the tone of this little poem. And chemo and sorrow, you have us saying again and again throughout this little poem, oh, oh, oh. Brilliant, Stephanie.
Wow. I'm glad I couldn't take credit for that. It just sort of, you know, you're lucky when it flows sometimes.
Well, because you have an instinct. You know, you have a powerful instinct for sound, and that's what your body was saying to do for this particular little poem. And I noticed, too, at the very end of the poem, you lead us out of the poem with one of those O's.
The bones. The bare bones.
Light hides, I rest, and the breath, do you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Of my belly, my bared bones. Oh, so you're taking us right off to sleep there. So I am really impressed with what you do with sound and how you wield this little form.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm struck looking at it again and having heard you read it, that the economy of the form, for one thing, it's really
tight.
Tight, yes. No room for fooling around here, but for error or whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet this whole sequence moves. There's a pattern of assonance that moves from eyes, from the words like, falls in, whim, weight, whimsy, to the O's. And so it really is a beautiful little, you know, dance of sound. Yeah. Yeah,
it is.
Nice.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. I fell upon something and got lucky and then stuck with it for whatever reason. So,
I mean, the light, the last stanza of this brings, you have both the I's and the O's again. You have light, hides, and then the B's have figured in here as well, but then to the bared bones. It's nice. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Stephanie, was this sequence the first of this form that you worked in?
Yes. Yes.
Now, so when you started this one, when you were working on this poem, did you realize that you were going to write a sequence that would take us the reader through the day, or did it just did you just notice that you were doing this and then decided, well, I'm going to make this a poem that takes us through an entire day?
I can't remember. It was probably more the former than the latter. I think I was, whatever was happening was something that I needed. It was sort of like journaling in its own way, right? You know, mm-hmm. reflecting on a day. And it's been a while now. I wrote this in 2007, it looks mm-hmm. like, in that mm-hmm. spring, 3 years ago. And I just think the sounds were coming and the day shaped the way that it did, and the syllables came out in those lines the way that they did, and you know, sometimes magic just happens and you can't take credit
That's
for
right.
anything but mm-hmm. recording it.
I find, though, that the magic usually happens after a lot of hard work.
Yeah, there were probably a lot of other
problems. A lot of hard work, and then the magic
Yes, and actually this one we did workshop in class,
yes,
as I recall.
Yes, I remember
yes.
it well,
yeah.
and I
yeah.
remember
you helped me a lot with this already.
Really admiring this little poem. And I, again, the good thing was that I didn't recognize that you were using a form that was very subtle.
I remember that a number of times with others mm-hmm. of the form that I wrote, that you would make suggestions, and I would go, no, I can't do that, Kathy, because
right.
it doesn't fit the form.
And I would say, well, Stephanie, be that as it may, but this doesn't work the way it is. And,
right.
And, well, you whatever you did, you got it. You did it.
Thank you. I had a lot of help with this one. I remember that the final stanza was really hard to write. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't get that one. That was a tricky one.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I also love that last line in the first little poem, Dawn. Curtains parted, light falls in, and then the final line, naked stretch lifts from the bed. This reminds me of me in the morning. I'm not enough of myself when I first get up that it's almost something else is lifting me out of the bed, naked stretch lifts from the bed.
And carrying you down to the coffee pot.
Right.
Exactly.
So that's a lovely little line, too.
Thank you.
It is indeed. Yeah. So let's hear another one of these.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, this one... The poem guest, did it follow by some interval of time this initial venture into the form?
Yes, there were a couple of poems in between Virgin Dance and this one that were there. And what was happening in my life, apparently, as I look back on some of these, was I was doing that working artist series for that program I called What Nourishes. And I met a number of wonderful people and wonderfully interesting people, and they inspired me. Mm-hmm. And Daniel Nevins was one of them, a visual artist. Mm-hmm. I remember that poem. And there were a couple, interestingly, with Tim Yeager, who is a ballet master, that actually followed this one. Bill Gerhardt, the title of this poem is Guests, Bill Gerhardt, Tim Yeager, The Working Artist Series and What Nourishes, WPVMLP, Asheville 103.5 FM. And Bill Gerhardt has gone on to actually do a show here at Asheville
he
FM.
And Sharon are
yes,
on.
He's
yes.
on Thursdays. Yeah. And Tim Yeager is still the ballet master with Terpsichore, and they bring wonderful art to Asheville. And this poem does not have titles for each one. It sort of becomes a story, and then the seven stanzas are in there, three lines. I am surprised when Gerhardt, jazz composer pianist, tells me he hears the music first in his head, then plays it on the keyboard. Tim Yeager, ballet master, feels the sound. Wordless rhythms, melodies, spring whole from him, make the shapes that's Tim, the man, the dancer. Ballet master, though, is like God the Father. Everywhere, in every movement, yet nowhere is he seen, like my own father, gone since I was born.
Mm. Mm. Oh, Stephanie. Yes, this little poem is, it's still in the stanzas with very strict syllable count, but you've used enjambment. One stanza leads to the next. In most cases, not all cases, there's one end stopped stanza. That this poem takes such a poignant, surprising turn at the end. And I love that. I love when a poem takes me to a place I totally did not expect, but when I get there, I say, that's the place I'm supposed to be. Did you find that surprise when you were working on this?
You know, I do remember this poem very well, and you know, it is along the process that, as a teacher, I remember you encouraging us to do. It's like digging and digging and digging and digging until you find that abiding image, the real nugget, mm-hmm. that is layering, you know, or creates the layers that eventually get you to something that is that surprise and mystery. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I first brought the only one that I did in the workshop in the Great Smokies Writing Program was the first one, mm-hmm. that we just read. All the others that I workshopped with you, we did in Movable Feast, which was
right.
a summer
yeah.
thing that a bunch of your students, other students, my fellow
yeah.
students and I
yeah.
Participated in. And I remember bringing this one to one of those, and I had a very different ending. And then I offered this ending as a substitute, and maybe not, I don't even know if I did, but the first one fell very flat because it was contrived.
Mm.
But then when the honesty, you made me be honest.
I beat it out, obviously.
Yeah, it did. And I was easy, though. I was an easy mark. I could see the rightness of it. And even when I read it now.
Yet nowhere is he seen like my own father, gone since I was born. Wow. This poem moves from the most particular quotidian, you know, details to that archetypal God the Father, and then the personal Father, and you're still doing that wonderful stuff with sound. You've got again those O's, yet nowhere is he seen like my own Father, gone since I was born, seen on, gone, born. It's just you're letting that instinctive feel of sound guide you, and do the same thing as if you were deliberately trying to do rhyme. You know, these poems wanted that those words in it that would echo each other. So it's just an amazing little poem. I'm glad I pushed you on this one.
I'm glad you did too. I really like this poem. And part of what with the interesting journey that happens in this little poem is we start with one artist who hears it in his head. So it starts in the head, and then it goes to the heart, where the dancer is sort of, you know, moved to do his art until it really hits me in the gut, that invisible yeah. place where it ends up moving.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Yeah.
You know, I also had this moment when I thought about the writing process, the process of what a poem is, when you say that that's Tim, the man, the dancer, ballet master, though, is like God the Father, everywhere in every movement, yet nowhere is he seen. And that's what I think form, the structure, should be like. It's there everywhere, but if you do it well, nowhere should it be seen.
Very good.
You know? So, again, Stephanie, you're just brilliant.
I had a lot of help. Okay, audience, we know I had a lot of help.
No, she did not have as much as she's trying to get you to believe she did.
Well, thanks so much. And this is Wordplay. I'm your host, Jeff Davis. Joining me in the studio today, North Carolina Poet Laureate Kathy Smith Bowers and Stephanie Bozuski. We'll be right back.
I came crawling home last night, like many nights before. Finally made it to my feet as she opened up the door. And she said, you're not gonna do this anymore. She said, I'm gonna hire a widow to decorate our home, so you'll feel more at ease here and you won't need to roam. We'll take out the dining room table, we'll put a bar along that wall, and a neon sign will point the way to our bathroom down the hall. She said, just bring those Friday paychecks and I'll cash them all right here, and I'll keep on tap for all your friends the favorite kind of beer, and for you I'll always keep in stock those soft aluminum cans, and when you're feeling macho you can crush them like a man. She said, we'll rip out all the carpet and put sawdust on the floor, serve hard-boiled eggs, pretzels, and I won't cook no more. There'll be Monday night football on TV above the bar, and a payphone in the hallway when your friends can't find their car. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you'll feel more at ease here and you won't need to roam. We'll take out the dining room table and put a bar along that wall, and a neon sign will point the way to our bathroom down the hall. She said, you'll get friendly service and for added atmosphere, I'll slip on something sexy and I'll cut it clear to here. Then you can slap my bottom every time you tell a joke, just as long as you keep tipping, well, I'll laugh until you're broke. She said, instead of a family quarrel, we'll have a barroom brawl. When the helms bear says it's closing time, you won't have far to crawl. And when you run out of money, you'll have me to thank. You can sleep it off next morning while I'm putting it in the bank. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you feel more at ease here and you all need to roam. Then when you and your friends get off from work and you have a powerful thirst, well, there won't be any reason why you can't stop off here first. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino
and he'll
decorate our home, so you feel more at ease here and you all need to roam. We'll take out the dining room table, put a bar along that wall, and a neon sign will point the way to our bathroom down the hall. She said, I'm gonna hire a wino to decorate our home, so you feel more at ease here and you all need to roam.
And yes, you are listening to Wordplay on Asheville FM. Stephanie, that was a very interesting musical choice. Now, what? Tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, I'm going to read a poem that sort of has something to do with drinking in it. But I heard that song a couple of weeks ago on The Stash. The DJ, yeah, or DJs, Sam and Gary, play country music. And
that's another program here on Asheville,
yes,
FM.
Yes, that's right. It is.
For those of you out there who have not yet tuned in.
And it was perfect. I contacted the DJ, and he let me use the piece of music, and I knew it was going to be perfect because I know Kathy likes country music.
Oh, yes.
Yes,
and yeah, there's, you know, that just that sort of down-to-earth thing. You know, you can be really heady, mm-hmm, with a form and an experimentalist, mm-hmm, and, you know, all that, mm-hmm, kind of brainy stuff, and then, yeah, there's nothing like having a beer. And every, yeah, wino needs a, right, job.
Yeah. So it'd be good for the local economy. That, yeah, was I'm Gonna Hire a Wino to Decorate Our Home, in case you didn't get the title of it. And that's by David Frizzell and Shelley West.
That's right.
Yeah. Wonderful. Wonderful song. Wonderful song.
Yeah, your the choice in music's not quite as the lines aren't quite as subtle as what you do in your poems.
Well,
nice contrast there. Well, you do have this lovely poem that has something to do with drinking.
Uh-huh.
So would you read us?
I would be happy to read this one. It's called Shameless. Walk Asheville streets, and you may see the couple who wander. She's the one who will approach. Got a five? Me and my guy ain't doing too good today. We need a beer. My mother's daughter says no. Twice. Don't want my cash spent that way. But wait. Like getting laid. Simply what you need sometimes. Bubbly ale. Giving up good head. Pale. Dark. Matters not. Just wet what's parched. Fair request, gypsy pair. Next time we meet, I'll spring for beer.
Nice little shift in perspective there. Oh, you got naughty in this one, Steve.
Yeah, well.
You must have been delighted when you came up with that.
When I had the guts to do that, when I got to that abiding image.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
did I teach you that kind of stuff?
I think you might have, Loretta.
Bad girl.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Bad girl, Stephanie.
You've been a good inspiration to me and a good influence on me, Kathy. I can only thank you again and again.
Oh, Lord. I love that line. My mother's daughter says no twice.
Yeah.
And we all have those moments when, even though we swore we were not going to be like our mothers, we hear our mother's voices coming through our own mouths. That's just
twice.
Twice.
I actually met up with that couple twice. I think it was, and you know how I'll just give a little bit of background on this. Of course, these people did walk up to me twice in Asheville, on the streets of Asheville, wandering around. And we all have that uncomfortableness around homeless people or people that are asking for money.
Sure.
And it gave me great pause, actually. So I'm glad my mother's daughter said no and made me think twice about homelessness and having a beer and my good fortune and all the rest of that. Anyway, that was just an aside.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the way your title resonates. Can you talk a little bit about that? Shameless.
Oh, let's see. It's the honesty, right? The honesty of just saying, we're having a bad day. Right. We're having a bad time. I don't have money, but I just need a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you might just need any basic physical thing,
right.
A piece of bread, glass of beer, a little sex, lay down, watch a movie, whatever it is that needs, lets the body relax and rest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And
without shame.
And the speaker learns that perhaps that kind of shamelessness might be called for sometimes.
Uh-huh.
So
there's nothing shameful about it. Right.
Yeah. It's lovely. It's funny and it's poignant and it's deeply moving. So you do have that way with getting both humor and tenderness, I think, in a poem. So good stuff.
I definitely learned that from my teacher. Definitely learned that from my teacher. Thank you.
Well, you have another one, Stephanie.
It seems like we have time to do backup one that
we
do.
I have. This one was, let's see. You know, once I got on a roll with writing in this form, I was finding things all over the house, both my internal house and my physical house.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a poem about a woman who is an artist named Lissa Friedman, who created a painting for me. Anyway, I think all of it's in the poem here. I once commissioned Lissa Friedman. Resurrection. the title of the work she painted back in 99. It depicts a lady pirouetting on the body of a young, fair-haired man. His eyes are closed. His limp arm hangs from the slab on which he lies, overcome. Rainbow-colored vortex spins and weaves its strands in through her hair. She dances. Death below, chance above. I remember every detail, though she's boxed and hidden in my basement.
Mm. You know, talk nice. About one of the things that I, one of my many mantras is that when the poem ends, the reader's mind should keep going. And this is a wonderful example of how that happens. I remember every detail, though she's boxed and hidden in my basement. That resonates powerfully. It's almost, it reminds me of T.S. Eliot's notion of the objective correlative, so that by the time we get to the end of this poem, we realize that this woman in the painting, this commissioned painting, might be some aspect of the speaker of the poem. So did you get any, do you remember getting surprises as you were working on this poem, Stephanie, when you commissioned the painting, did you feel that a part of you was in this particular image?
Absolutely, that was the purpose of the commission, actually. This artist, I gave her free rein, basically, and let her, and asked her to do a portrait of me, and it was an interpretive one. It was what she saw in me is this kind of person who dances, and I asked her about it a number of years later, what it meant for her. For me, and I titled it because I saw the painting and she didn't really have a title for it, and I saw it and said, resurrection. It was the rising of a body from a body for me, you know, and that sort of change and, well, rising. She, when I asked her how she, you know, what she felt as she was creating the painting, she said it was for her the overcoming of darkness with light. So whatever, I mean, I don't know if you can imagine the painting or not. I mean, it is my painting, and it did hang for a while in a home that I lived in Massachusetts. And then when I came here, it still stays boxed and hidden in my basement. This figure haunts me, and the two figures haunt me, actually. The dead male figure on this floating slab, with the female pirouetting literally over the dead body. It haunts me. I'm not sure where to take it from there, but
It's, you know, you your placement of that image. I remember every detail, though she's boxed and hidden in my basement. That's exactly what the reader is left with, the idea that the speaker is haunted by this image. And wherever the speaker puts this image, the speaker's still going to be haunted by the image.
Yeah, and it feels very, for me, it feels very visceral. It feels very deep, literally, physically in me, you know. In my basement. in my basement.
Right. Not just the physical...
of my house, of which is house, where it is. Course. Yes, boxed right, in. Right, yes, yeah, right.
Well, yeah, Stephanie, yeah. One thing you do, you do such a wonderful job of, even though we can't see that painting, you do a powerful job of getting us as close as you possibly can. His eyes are closed. His limp arm hangs from the slab on which he lies, overcome. Rainbow-colored vortex spins and weaves its strands in through her hair. Wonderful job of helping us see exactly what the images were on that painting, even though you're using words instead of paints here. Beautiful.
Nice. Well, Stephanie, why don't you tell us one more time about this form? We'll invite our readers to send some.
Ah.
If you're.
Our okay, readers, our listeners,
yeah,
or
okay,
yes, those out there in radio land.
Those of us who, and I need some, you know, I know that I could maybe use this form. To sometimes what I do is if I'm working on a poem that doesn't seem to want to find its own shape,
mm-hmm,
this is a perfect time to maybe say, okay, you won't decide what shape you want to take, so I'm going to impose this form on you, and some marvelous things can happen. That's really when the magic can happen. So, Stephanie, if any members of our audience wanted to take a poem that they've been struggling with and compress it and give it shape with this little form, tell us one more time what we should do.
Okay. You're going to write a 7-stanza poem, and each stanza consists of 3 lines. And the only other rule is that the first line has 4 syllables of the stanza, the second line has 3, and the final line of the stanza has 7. So 4, 3, 7 time, and 7 in that 4, 3, 7 time. It's pretty simple, and there's no rhyming. I mean, you know, if you
no
want
rhyme scheme necessary,
right?
So,
yeah.
If, unless you know you want to put one in there, you could, you know, make.
Yeah, you certainly could. This is Stephanie's original form, but you know, do your own version of it.
Have fun.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I remember a number of times you'd give us. I was your student for a number of semesters, mm-hmm, and you would sometimes give us the assignment to write.
Try a form,
yeah. And what fun! Mm-hmm. What fun! Yeah. And it really does discipline you and harness your poetry in mm-hmm a very.
And you know, interestingly enough, these forms do the opposite. They free us from control.
Yes,
they free us from control.
Yeah, sweet.
And that is Wordplay for this week. So if you would like to try one of these, this form, and one of your own poems, you can send it to csblaureate, all one word, at gmail.com. And maybe we'll work with it on the air. You never know. For more information about today's show and previous shows, links to our archives, just check out naturespoetry.blogspot.com. Thanks very much for coming in today, Kathy and Stephanie.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Stephanie. Thank you, Jeff.
Thank you, Kathy.
Thank you.